might imagine that in our so-called scientifically enlightened society, that the mere existence or non-existence of a material object could be easily resolved. But as of now, the resolution of the UFO question still seemed as remote as a politician's promise for a tax cut. In fact, the whole question of UFOs has turned into a hotly debated potpourri of governmental denials, eyewitnesses' fervent eyes, plus the scientific cold shoulder. To all of this is added the not-so-savory flavor of frauds and psychopaths who have suddenly found a new way to gratify their needs. Out of this has come an aura of seemingly calculated confusion that quickly surrounds those looking for answers to the UFO riddle. It's into this confusion that we have delved, and what we've found may surprise and even shock you.
So fast that I just didn't even say anything. I didn't even, wasn't too sure I seen it. I just was hoping something would come out on the film, which it did. It come in at fantastic speed.
Slipping into filth, lonely but surrounded, a new place to drown, 6 feet beneath the moon. Heroes, a bloodsucker, painting black and blue objects with projections of himself. It was always about himself. He jerks inside, his guns twist, sits in the big smoke and thinks of her, me and you against this city of parasites.
Science feel about UFOs? Well, it varies somewhat, but generally speaking, they're as cautious and as cold as a Scrooge at Christmas time. Contacted by phone Dr. Theodore S. Jacobson. When I asked him for his opinion of unidentified flying objects, he answered in frostbitten tones, "I have no observations about them. I have no feelings at all. Goodbye." I was so underwhelmed by his coolness that at the time I thought I might have been connected to the university's computer by mistake. I hadn't been. Hoping that this attitude wouldn't pervade the entire astronomy department, I contacted the Information Center, where they assured me a warm and lengthy interview would be granted by Dr. George Wallerstein of the Astronomy Department. I called Dr. Wallerstein and asked if I could get any information at all on UFOs, pro, con, or neutral. That's a lot of nonsense. I don't even want to get involved in it. I think you'll understand my position. I said, no, I wasn't sure that I did. That ended our conversation. Now, contactee, as most UFO buffs will tell you, is someone that has actually contacted and communicated with the intelligences that man the outer space saucers. It should be mentioned, the majority of these contactees don't trifle with having just one contact with UFOs. Oh no, this is a frightfully low score, as one self-claimed contactee now tells us.
Why, I saw my first flying saucer back in 1956 when it landed in the Santa Rosa Mountains there in California. Well, since that time, I think I've had over 55 sightings personally, but I can receive messages from them just about any time I want to, that is, if they're in the area at all.
Some people have all the luck. I've got a stiff neck, and the only thing I've been able to see is the Echo satellite making its round. That all people who claim telepathic communication with flying saucers are frauds or psychopaths would be like saying that all men with beards are beatniks. But even the irredoubtable Air Force has publicly stated that they can't prove that the UFOs don't exist. So here we are with at least the equal chance that they might exist. And if they do exist, we would probably have to admit by the very fact of their being here from some distant sphere that they are somewhat advanced technologically. Telepathic communication? Who knows? Even though the Air Force outwardly plays the coy game of trying to discredit all UFO sightings, there are ample indications that they are more convinced than not of the reality of UFOs. In fact, the Air Force's much publicized "gee whiz, all these people must be seeing things" attitude is belied by their handling of some of the UFO sightings. The Air Force's code name for the project to identify the unidentified objects, Project Blue Book.
was a little boy about 12, 13 years old. Two other Boy Scouts and I spent a night out in the mountains camping. And we were lying there. I spotted them first, or it first. There were five stars up in the sky, almost directly overhead. And four of them were motionless, but one was going through some of the most fantastic, unbelievable gyrations. I mean, it just, it didn't make sense. Going through it, it was moving both vertically and then descending and then from side to side, but it was staying within these other four cluster of four stars until finally, much to the disbelief almost of the three of us, all five of them just and they were gone. And never, I thought it well, you know, as a youngster, we thought they were shooting stars, but there was still something that didn't register in the back of my mind until a good many years later. I had never heard of flying saucers or UFOs or anything of the kind. I was, my wife and daughter and I were going up over the Alaska Highway. And we met and became acquainted with a young Air Force officer who also was going up to be assigned at Elmendorf Air Force Base. I won't mention his name. At the time it was very hush-hush, but considerable has happened since then. I will say this much, that we, through our acquaintance with him, I think got authentic information. He was working on the project for the identification of unidentified flying objects. And what we heard from him confirmed my, in my subconscious mind, this little thing that had been hanging back there about these stars that I'd seen as a little boy, that I had actually observed an unidentified flying objects or a group of spaceships.
I was shown things of the future of this earth. It was like a look into the future. I was shown by these beings and by that experience on the night of May 11, 1957, that our civilization is in great danger. I was shown these words and actually walked this experience out, an all-night experience from 10:30 at night until dawn the next morning with the ship nearby. These words, your civilization is on the edge of a precipice. That is what I was told in my consciousness by an outside being, an outside voice, and I heard it clearly in my own consciousness. This experience was repeated, the crisis of the civilization, the second time, just a little ways farther in my night walk, my night experience. And the second time they said these words, the responsibility is very great. There is no room for mistakes. Now I feel that I was shown that our civilization is going to go through two especially critical periods, and that we need to be very careful and how we handle and how we do things through that time, because the whole civilization might go over the dam.
UFO sightings that have been reported, it's very conceivable that many of them are just what the Air Force seems intent on having us think they are, natural phenomena or hallucinations. There's a classic type of sighting, however, that sometimes involves as many as 4 out of our 5 basic senses, plus the frequent occurrence of mechanical or electrical defects. Under normal circumstances, it's difficult to imagine that all of these perceptions are but hallucinations. We'll be right back.
the late afternoon, just before dark, one of the old dogs and two of the puppies jumped the deer. The old dogs came back, but the two puppies didn't jump back. They got lost. About 12 o'clock at night, I heard somebody shoot up in the direction that I heard the two young dogs last running. So I figured somebody had shot my dog for a deer or something like that. So I cranked up my buggy. So I had gone about a mile probably, and I saw this light up about 300 foot in the air above the cypress tree. So I sat there for a little bit, and I watched it go. I cranked up, turned on my light, and headed on up to the ship. But as one of my dogs left, he come back to send the buggy, and he started to howl and carrying on so until I shut the buggy off about 250 yards from him. Got off, walked on up to the ship. Well, I stood there about a half a minute, looking up to where the windows were, and I waved, and nothing had happened. Stood there probably another half a minute, waved again. And that's the last thing that I know. Some kind of a light that came from just beneath the bottom of your window. It looked like a sharp pencil light about 6 inches long, about the size of a pencil. Struck me and hit me right in the eye. When I came to, I couldn't see. I was blind in both eyes. When I come to, I couldn't see, so I could hear the dog in the buggy out there scratching and trying to get out. So I crawled around I don't know if that was in the night or in the daytime, but the next morning when I got to where I could see a little bit, but it was just, and there I was in the hospital about 10 days.
I could describe it in saying this. On the first sighting of it and realizing it wasn't something I'd ever seen before, it scared me very badly. I mean, tremendously. I think it scared me so bad I couldn't even run.
Oh. got quite an unusual, well, it had an unusual appearance. It almost frightened me. Then he started scribbling something sporadically on a piece of paper.
Kent. I was approximately 5 miles out of Kent. I always pass this grocery store, which is Foss's grocery store, and I always make a left-hand turn at Foss's grocery store. And at the time, I hadn't realized this, but I had gone past this turn. I had gone approximately one block past the store where I just, from nowhere, the car was just stopped right in the road. And my first thought was that I had hit something in the road. And I didn't really realize at the time there was no jolt or any movement of the car at all. When I finally realized I was stopped, I thought, whatever it is, I've hit something to make me stop. I saw this object, I thought, well, whatever I've hit, it threw it to the top of the car. And then when it started hovering over the car, I knew that I must not have hit it because otherwise it wouldn't be spinning like it was. Thank you. It just spun real slow. Only a child's top will go faster than what this was going. It had an orange glow to it, just sort of like a fire, but yet it didn't look like fire. It was just, you know, the color of fire. The whole thing was completely covered, you know, like this orange glow. Actually know what it was. I just kept my eyes on it, and it just kept moving around in the same direction. The more I watched it, the more I was more or less under its spell, it seemed like, because I couldn't even move. All I could do was just watch it. And I just kept thinking to myself, what is it? What does it want, and why doesn't it go away?
Yes, there are many more calls. In the past 2-3 weeks, we've received quite a number of calls. In fact, so much so that the civilian defense has taken on the responsibility of compiling the listing of the calls.
Stevie, let's go to Endicott. I got my Farfisa organ still down in my cellar, so we can work on some music there. At the diner there, near Johnson City, not too far from Endicott. There's some good French fries and gravy. Tomorrow's another day. Stevie! There's some good French fries and gravy. You might bring your bass with you. Head out to Binghamton, maybe Ithaca. All right, so I'll probably see you soon there. French fries and gravy.
We're not in a position to decide this. This is not our, we're a compiling agency. This is not a position to make a decision as to whether they are fact or fiction.
Let's go to Endicott and head out. French fries and gravy, Johnson City, here we come. All right, so I'll probably see you soon there. I'll see you there.
Dr. Henry Eyring, in elaborating on the thought of extraterrestrial life, says that it's natural to conclude that the universe is flooded with intelligent beings, and presumably always has been.
This is the end of the night. No one's on the floor. No more records will spin now. No more will they pour. The cashing up and calling cabs. We must go.
If we've carried our thinking this far, it certainly wouldn't be amiss to assume that some of these intelligences have advanced beyond the intellectual level of we Earthlings. For how vain it would be to assume that we, and only we, have had the opportunity to exist and progress throughout all the vast cosmos of eternity. Have to do with unidentified flying objects? Maybe nothing. But then, it presents some rather exciting possibilities. Doesn't it?
I'll be good to you on the primrose path, and we'll forget I am a sociopath. I will buy you things, cry Lion King, and I'll try not break your sweet.
Close the night, I want to say a verse, and this verse is of unknown origin. It's a short verse, but a profound verse, and it is at once a wish and a description of something that can be real. May everyone be happy. May everyone be free of disease. May auspiciousness be seen everywhere. May suffering belong to no one. Peace.